This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Extreme weather events are now more common. Storms are growing more intense. Rain events are dumping more water. Days are getting hotter. San Antonio is seeing more 100-degree days. Climate change has come home. The City of San Antonio, UTSA, and CPS Energy are currently working on a plan to address the effects of climate change, like greenhouse gas emissions and the impact on air quality. It's called SA Climate Ready. But what does this mean? What are the goals? What do San Antonio residents need to know about possible future climate impacts and what they can do about it? Give us a call as we have this conversation. You're invited. You're the star. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org, and you can tweet at us at @tprsource. With us this afternoon, we're joined by Doug Melnick, the Chief Sustainability Officer for the City of San Antonio, Hazim Rashid Alid. He is the professor at UTSA College of Architecture, Construction, and Planning, and he is serving as the UTSA lead on climate action planning. And Chris Yolkster, he is the Chief Operating Officer for CPS Energy. And welcome all of you. It's great to have you here. So, Doug, City of San Antonio, let's start off with you, because this is the city is a big part of this, but all of you guys, this is sort of a three-legged stool I see
Absolutely.
This as. But Doug, where is the city on this plan? And talk about what is the plan trying to achieve?
Sure, and thanks for having us to talk on this topic. It's really important. So this grew out of the SA Tomorrow Sustainability Plan that was adopted by council last year. And it really is, as you mentioned, it's about climate change. We recognize that the science has been decided. Climate change is occurring. It's being caused by human activity, and it's going to have impact on our community. And so the intent of this project is to, there's two pieces. It's to develop a plan to reduce our emissions, both as a municipal organization as well as community-wide, and that's from energy and building sector, transportation, solid waste, water, you name it. And then the second part is really looking at what those climate impacts are that we're experiencing now and what they're projected in the future, and basically preparing our community for them, both people and systems.
Now, isn't it kind of naive to think that a city can have an impact on the global climate? You know, there's a lot, it's a big planet.
Sure, absolutely. And that's, I think, you know, one of the challenges we have is climate change is such a big, scary concept. And there have been lots of sociological studies that have really started looking at how do you communicate this? And, you know, it really is a local issue. It's caused from local municipalities and places around the globe, but the impacts are felt locally. And so I think the process is for us to work across sectors with all stakeholders and really communicate this in a way that people can understand and appreciate what we're trying to accomplish here and what happens if we don't. I think it's important that this really, at the end of the day, isn't about climate. It's about people's quality of life now and in the future. And what do we love about San Antonio? And what does that future look like for San Antonio? And is that what we want? And how do we change it?
Hazim Rashid Ali at UTSA, you're taking the lead on the climate action planning. What are you looking at? What do you think this will look at as we move through this process?
Well, thank you, David. Thank you for having us. As Doug mentioned, this project is really a very collaborative project between UTSA, CPS, and the city. So CPS was generous enough to provide us with $500,000 of funding, which is part of a larger collaboration between CPS Energy and UTSA. We as a team are working very closely with both the city sustainability office and other departments in the city, as well as with CPS Energy. We have a very comprehensive scope. So the two big pieces of our work are the two that Doug mentioned, the Climate Action Plan and the Climate Adaptation Plan. So in the Climate Action Plan, we will be doing what's called the greenhouse gas inventory for the city, for the community, which is an assessment of the equivalent emissions coming out of different activities around the city, whether it's energy use, transportation, industry, etc. And then working with the city will be assessing a series of strategies that the city can adopt in terms of trying to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. And one of the things that we're focused on, both because the city asked us to do so, but also because we feel it's important, is that we don't really want to make any suggestions without having a lot of analyses, a lot of studies, a lot of number crunching, if you will, that we can then take to the city and say, okay, if you do this, these are the costs attached to it. These are the benefits that you're going to get from it, both direct benefits as well as indirect benefits on things like air quality, water quality, human health, quality of life, things like that, so that the city and the community, when they make a decision about which strategies they would like to adopt, they make an informed decision, a decision that's actually based on an understanding of the impacts that, they might get. The second component that we're working on is the climate adaptation plan, and the starting point for that would be a climate projection, which is a study that looks into the future and tries to model what the climate of San Antonio will be like within the next 30, 35 years. And based on that, we can start, again, working with CPS Energy, working with the city, trying to see what's going to happen into the future. Are we going to have more hot days, more rain, more floods, more storms? And then be ready for that. So working with both city departments as well as with the community to make sure that we are prepared for what we know is coming. Alongside that, we have a very active community engagement process. Again, this was something that was requested by both CPS Energy and the city, and it's also something that we as a public university house in San Antonio feel very strongly about. So we believe that whatever we propose, if we don't have public engagement, if we don't have public buy-in, its potential for implementation is really low. So we're really very interested in engaging the community in San Antonio, across the city, all demographics, all sectors, both telling them what we're doing and hearing back from them. So we have a number of feedback loops built into the process in which we'll take components of our work, present it to the community, get their input on that, and then come back and make changes and bring it to them again. So that, again, will be a very important component of our work. We actually have a very interesting team from UTSA. We have a number of faculty, about 8 faculty representing 4 different colleges, which is probably the only way you can tackle a project that is so complex. So we have myself with a background in the built environment. We have an economist on board. We have environmental scientists. We have public policy experts. We have communication experts. And we also have a large number of students, which is an asset that probably other cities who developed climate action plans did not have. So these are students who essentially represent the future of San Antonio. And I think by participating in this project, they can then take the experience that they gain from it and apply it to other factors, other parts of their career across the city.
So real quickly, you mentioned other cities are doing something similar.
We're definitely not the first city to do a climate action plan. Many large cities have done it. On the other hand, we're probably the first city that does it in this way. So in such
which
a
way? How different?
The collaboration. The collaboration aspect of it is really unique. So the fact that the scope of work is being implemented by a public university, supervised and having oversight from the city, and funded and with full collaboration from a municipally owned utility company, at least I'm not aware of a similar example. And I think that collaboration is a huge asset for us in our work that we fully intend to take advantage of. And in my view, that will be a model that other cities can follow in the future.
So that could make San Antonio a leader in coming up with action plans for cities across the country and hopefully getting cities to work together on coming up with a comprehensive plan and a strategy that will come up with real results. Our phone lines are open. If you've got a question or a comment as San Antonio develops a climate action plan, the number is 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The University of Texas at San Antonio researchers are going to spend a year formulating a climate mitigation and adaptation plan for the city of San Antonio. The research is being funded by $500,000 by CPS Energy from a research grant. We're talking about that this afternoon, San Antonio's climate action plan. What do you want to see in this plan? And how important is it to you that this plan is taken on? San Antonio becomes a leader in trying to come up with a plan for cities across the nation and around the world in dealing with this problem. We're also joined by Chris Uster. He is the Chief Operating Officer for CPS Energy. And Chris, why is CPS Energy taking on this project? Why the grant, and why are you so involved?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having us on the show here as part of the conversation. I would say utilities can and should play a leadership role in addressing this issue. You know, we can reduce our emissions, so we are a big player in this discussion, but we can also tackle other industries. So the whole transportation sector is something that we can potentially electrify, reduce emissions there. So we are an important player in this, and we, as CPS Energy, believe that we have a lot to contribute here. And I think, like Hazeem and Doug said, the unique thing about this is the partnership with academia, with the city, and the utility all coming together to develop this plan in partnership with the community itself.
All right. So CPS Energy, you guys are in energy business. You produce
Yes.
energy, and that means right now that is you burn carbon to do so, not all the time, but most of the time, right?
Yeah. Yes. Well, again, we have made some pretty significant progress on that, on reducing our emissions. We are retiring two coal plants next year. That's 15 years ahead of schedule. We are running our coal plants and our fossil plants a lot less than we have in the past. They used to be baseload plants running 24/7. Now we may lay them up over periods of the year.
So they're capacity plants.
Capacity
when
plants.
When we need the juice, we can get it. We can
yeah.
turn it on.
Ironically, sometimes they're actually firming up renewables. So they'll be at kind of minimum load during the evening hours when there's a lot of Texas wind on the grid. And then when the wind dies off, we'll ramp them up to, again, firm up that power. So until battery storage, energy storage comes into play, they do play an important role in, again, having a diverse dynamic resource for our community.
So you have to weigh all these different economic factors. You know, this is not a utopian plan. We have to work in the real world of supplying a city with the energy it needs and the energy to be competitive, but also looking forward down at the road of being open to how can we eventually become coal-free? Is that the eventual objective?
No, I think we're on that track. You know, the question is the timing. How fast will battery storage come into play? Again, we have about 1,000 megawatts of wind, and we have 500 megawatts of solar. So that's, you know, that's the size of 2-3 big fossil plants right there. But again, they don't produce all the time. It depends if the sun is shining or the wind is blowing. And so until you can firm that up, those fossil plants play an important role. They're running less, there's fewer emissions, so there's kind of a virtual shutdown, so to speak. But they're going to be important, and we look at it year to year. So I don't, you know, we're not taking a 30, 40-year look at these assets that we have. We look at them every year, and we determine kind of how we run them and whether there's a case to shut them down.
Is there a possible target date somewhere, I know in the future, it's not today, not tomorrow, maybe 20, 25 years from now, 30 years from now, we can say San Antonio is coal free.
Well, look, I think it's, you know, I think it's, things will happen a lot faster than what we expect. The whole technology adoption is happening faster and faster. So I don't think we're talking about 25-year horizons. I think the decade of 2020 will be very, very interesting for us. But again, part of this is how battery storage plays out, because until you can store and firm up power, renewables will only get you so far. So we've got to see how fast that technology comes to the market.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. Calls are coming in. The number is 210-614-8980. As we talk about San Antonio's climate plan, we're talking about acting locally and thinking globally, and also acting globally and seeing the effects locally. Give us a call, 210-614-8980, and Jim is on the line. And Jim, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Great. Thanks for taking my call. I have two questions. One of them, I did not hear mention, and I may have missed it, of whether you're including saws in your planning. I'm reasonably familiar with what kinds of planning that they've been doing, and I've not been terribly impressed with their foresight to looking at climate change. And so I'm hoping that they will be included at the table so that they can be part of the planning and can also learn from the planning.
Can you tell me more what was disappointing about SAWS to you?
Well, looking at their, I've read their recent climate or water plan for the city, master water plan for the city, and it's focused on what I regard as unrealistic population projections. And I'm a sociologist, and I tend to study those things. And also pretty much a same old system of water production. I just returned from a visit to Melbourne, Australia, where they're doing huge projects, wonderful projects in terms of stormwater capture. And they're in an even drier situation than we are. And when I visited the city council building, and it is net energy and net water independent. Plus, it's a very healthy building. Now it's a new building, so that. But okay. I don't see SAWS particularly.
All right.
I was disappointed. There was a lot of verbiage about what they're doing positively, but I didn't see any substance to it.
And your other question, Jim? Oh, it's good.
Well, are you including the Sierra Club?
Okay.
And I'm not part of. I'm part of the Sierra Club, but I'm not part of the team that's working on this. But there's several very knowledgeable people
okay.
who have been. And
let's get to those two things because you brought up a lot there. So, Doug Melnick, Chief Sustainability Officer for the City of San Antonio. San Antonio Water System is a municipally owned utility, just as CPS Energy is. So, where is SAWS in this process?
And absolutely, I think that the answer to that. Those two questions is yes. SAWS is will be a key partner with this as we start really launching this process in terms of being real technical advisors and being part of the discovery process for two reasons. One, when we start looking at reducing emissions, there's a water energy nexus. So it takes energy to move and treat water. So we want to have that conversation to see are there ways to do that more efficiently from an energy perspective, thereby reducing emissions. And then secondly, in terms of the adaptation perspective, you know, having them at the table as we start really working through those climate projections and seeing what those possible implications are in terms of water availability and water need.
So water security.
Exactly. And so I think it's, again, bringing all the data to the table that's existing now and that UTSA is going to develop, and having that stakeholder conversation to make sure that we're aware of what we need to work towards.
Yeah, so the caller, Jim, mentioned that he was came back from Melbourne, and as I was reading up for today's discussion, I look up the SA climate plan, and I didn't know I was reading it. I was going, wow, this is incredible. This is really progressive. And it turned out to be a Southern Australian climate plan.
Yes.
You know, and so what they're on an island, and they're really seeing the impacts of things very, very close up. And so they're taking it very, so people around the world are dealing with this, and here we are locally, not so much on the bean. So, but the Sierra Club, is that somebody that would you'd want to deal in there, Hazim?
Yes, actually, we are in touch with a number of environmental organizations, including the Sierra Club. They've been very effective in getting the community to be more aware of the issues, and we certainly appreciate their contribution. We have continuous conversations with all of them, and we look forward to their contribution to the process. So, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, we would like to engage all sectors of the community.
Yeah, business community.
Business community, absolutely. So we're certainly open to input from different parts of the community, including the environmental organizations, and we will reach out to them if they don't reach out to us.
And Chris?
Yeah, just real quick. We do meet with our environmental stakeholders every quarter. So it's always a good, interesting discussions. There are interesting ideas that come out of it. Some of the ideas are good, and some don't necessarily pencil out. But we really value that conversation. But we also value all the stakeholders of San Antonio.
Okay, Moses, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. My concerns are the science is there. People know what's going on, but there's a lot of people resistant to ideas, and that's an imposition. That's an impediment to growth. I think the educational part of this project is very interesting, but I think we should expand it to even to elementary schools. People become shareholders of this enterprise, and kids would be a changing force. There are other projects that I think need to be observed. I'm sure your guests know more about it. public transportation, particularly, and integrate it in a more regional form, like the ability to transport to Austin and all these corridors where we can lower the impact of fuel emissions with light train and things like that. I know they're complex, but I think they're a very important part of the conversation.
So we know that ground transportation is one of the biggest polluters that we have here locally, and we don't have many options for that. Doug Melnick, is mass transit, light rail, is that part of this plan?
Absolutely, and I think the opportunity that we have here is, and it's important to point out, we're not starting from scratch with addressing climate. There are a lot of efforts that have been underway for quite some time, whether we're talking about CPS's STEP program or water diversification or looking at emergency preparedness and also planning. So we have the SA Tomorrow plans that do include a multimodal transportation plan. There's been lots of discussions for some time about regional transportation options, and all of that is going to basically be a launching off point as we start evaluating what the greenhouse gas potentials and implications are for different strategies.
So Chris, I know y'all have those charging stations for electric vehicles around San Antonio. Have y'all seen a trend with those?
Yeah, we do see some of those charging stations get quite a bit of use, and some don't get any use at all. So to some extent, it is a learning as we start to get into this marketplace and where do we want to locate charging. What we have found is most people like to charge either at home or at the office, but they like the public charging infrastructure just from a kind of range anxiety perspective, but they really don't use it as much as you think. They either charge at home or at their office.
And any plans for expansions, or is that part of this?
Yes,
because people
we're looking
at those. More people buying electric cars? Are
yes.
you monitoring that?
Yes, more people are, and we are looking at electric vehicles.
Yeah, that's something we've been talking to CPS as far as evaluating the existing infrastructure and figuring out what the next steps are, and it fits very well into the climate planning process because the strategy we're going to be evaluating is electrification and figuring out how we do that.
And Hazim?
Yes. Again, as both Doug and Chris mentioned, electrification and electric vehicles are certainly one of the strategies that we'll be looking at. I think one of the things that our scope of work will add to the SA Tomorrow is that quantification aspects of having an assessment of the impacts. So SA Tomorrow was an excellent effort that already has suggested a lot of very good ideas for the city. But one of the challenges that you have when you present these ideas is that the answer that you get, okay, how much will it cost and do I get any benefits from it or not? And I think our role, the way we see our role as a UTSA team, is the objective evaluators who are going to look at a wide range of strategies and then provide the city and CPS Energy with the objective information that allows them to make informed decisions. And then we can move forward with selecting which strategies are more appropriate, which strategies will have community buy-in, and how can we implement them.
And the caller asked about reaching out to our kids, or helping them understand what's at stake and what role they have.
And he was absolutely correct, and this is one of the things that we are planning on. So one of the ideas that we have within our engagement plan that we have given the city for review is an idea called Meeting in a Box, which actually came from the city. So Meeting in a Box is to develop material, so because we cannot go everywhere with our team, so we develop material that other organizations can use to hold their own meetings. So one of the ideas we're considering is to develop materials that teachers in elementary schools can use for their plans.
Teaching aids.
Exactly.
Okay.
So we'll give them the material. They can then use it in their classroom because it is very important to introduce young children to these ideas. They'll be a lot less resistant to them than many other people in my age group or older.
When we come back from this break, I want to talk about what is the forecast for San Antonio. What would it look like? Well, the hot days, we do know we're seeing more 100-degree days. What would that look like 30 years, 35 years from now? Also, why is this important for San Antonio's financial ratings? Why Moody's and other organizations are looking at cities to make sure they're getting serious about climate change? The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Have you noticed the climate has changed? Weather has changed. I think it was Mark Twain said that weather is what you expect. Climate is what you get. And that's the difference between the two. And so, you know, over the years, I've noticed in my own garden, I mean, right now I'm still getting tomatoes out of my backyard, and never used to be that way. And so things have changed. But what about you? Do you think that San Antonio needs to become part of the solution and invest in a climate-ready plan? What does it mean to you? And what do San Antonio residents need to know about possible future climate impacts for the city? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Joan is called in. Joan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm very concerned about climate change, not, of course, just in San Antonio. We feel the effects of things that happen elsewhere as well. But, you know, underpinning the whole discussion of climate change has to be an awareness of the effects of population growth. I'm 65. Since I was born, the population of the Earth has increased by a factor of 3, and it's still increasing. So with increased population, whether it just be through, you know, increasing births and reducing deaths, or whether it be through immigration and growing communities that way, we have more people and we're going to have more people, and that means more resource use, that means more emissions and so forth. I'd like to know how these plans are addressing that and the need to actually contain population growth as an important element of containing impacts on the climate and on our environment.
All right, Joan, thank you for that. And so population growth is a global problem. We used to talk about the population explosion back in the day. But not only that, we're seeing people moving to San Antonio. It's population migration that seems to be the local issue that San Antonio needs to be thinking about. And we keep hearing about a million more people will be moving to San Antonio in the next 30 years. So Hasim Rashid Ali with UTSA, you're the lead actor on the lead planner on the Climate Action Plan. What about the population growth of San Antonio as we look at this plan?
I think John was absolutely correct. Population growth is a big factor that we will take into consideration into our planning. As you just mentioned, projections from the State Demography Office are projecting about a million new residents in San Antonio by 2040. That includes both increases in our birth rates as well as people moving to San Antonio, which is a good sign that our economy is flourishing, that people like San Antonio. But on the other hand, it does present some issues with regard to resource use and emissions, as Joan has mentioned. So one of the things that we have planned to do is after developing an assessment of our GHG emissions inventory for last year, for 2016, we're going to look into the future and look at how these emissions will grow in what we call a business as usual scenario. So that will account for expected population growth. It will account for expected changes in economic activities, as well as a number of other factors in which we can assess, okay, if we didn't do anything with either about population growth or anything else, what will we look like, let's say, in 2050? And then working with the city, we'll start to develop alternative scenarios that achieve certain reductions in GHG emissions over a span of let's say, 2050. It will be up to the city to determine what is the reduction that they would like, and then and the community, obviously. And then once we do that, then we'll go back as a team and figure out what is the best way to reach that objective, what is the best way to achieve the reduction target that the city and the community has agreed upon.
And Doug Melnick, Chief Sustainability Officer for the City of San Antonio, as new construction comes in, that new construction can be done at a more efficient level. You know, and it's really the older housing stock that is energy inefficient.
Sure. I mean, and I think Hazem's right. It's going to be a whole suite of options. It's about using what we have more efficiently and looking at how new growth occurs. And so it's transportation, it's land use, it's using technology. I think it's also being very cognizant of the equity issue. You know, I think as we start looking at strategies that would help us get there, really making sure, you know, we're having some frank conversations about what those potential impacts are going to be for different populations. So I think it's not an easy question as far as addressing growth and population, but I think this plan is going to provide us with a new metric which we can start tracking progress. And so the goal is to start getting the greenhouse gas reductions down. I think the big conversation that we're going to have is about, as Hazem had mentioned, the target and how aggressive that target is. Is it a immediate straight line from now to 2050, or is it a more gradual line that takes into consideration there's going to be improved technology that such as Chris had mentioned in terms of battery storage?
I would reiterate the point. We can be much more efficient in the use of our resources. You know, electricity usage and GDP growth were tightly correlated many, many decades. And over the last 15, 20 years, they've become decoupled. So we are using, our use per customer is going down. And so that allows us to serve the same growing population with the same resources. So I think that's key. We can, when someone thinks about putting solar in their home, you know, my question to them, have they made their home as energy efficient as possible? Go after that first, and then go after the zero emission production.
All right. So we know that Moody's recently announced that they were going to be looking at how cities handle climate change when they look at their ratings. And so Doug Melnick with the City of San Antonio, is that part of this as well?
Absolutely. I think, you know, the key to why we need to address climate is it's multi-beneficial. It's public health. It's having a vibrant quality of life and local economy, but it's also that this is something that's important to those outside of us, outside of San Antonio. And so, and this isn't something the Moody's is doing.
So that's important to them because they grade bonds that cities sell. And if a city is not doing climate change well, then
it's an increased risk.
Increased risk on being able to, because these bonds are often 50 years payable bonds, right?
Exactly. And so we've had some conversations, and I'm part of a national network of local sustainability officials, talking about how do we engage with the insurance industry. You know, it's in their interest, hopefully, to work with us to reduce risk. And then the question is, it sort of ties into Hazem's discussion around the cost-benefit analysis. There's cost with everything that we do. So is there a way of working with insurance companies to really figure out, is there a better way of financing these necessary adaptation measures that's going to benefit everybody in the long run?
So Hazem, what are the lead risks for San Antonio in connection with climate change? We're not on the coast, so it's not going to be sea level rise, I don't think. It's not going to rise that much. We're not in a forest, so it's not like the wildfires that we're seeing in California. Is it drought? Is that the thing we need? Or what do we need to be watching? Flash floods? Are those the things we've got to watch out for?
Well, we're actually, at this moment, we're doing a detailed climate projection for the city of San Antonio through 2050, which will give us really exact answers to these questions. But in general, and based on previous studies that have been done both about San Antonio and other cities, I think it's reasonable to expect a larger number of hotter days above 100 degrees or even more, more rain, more potential for storms. I mean, we all saw what happened to Harvey when he was
It
almost hit us. And Houston got its annual amount of rain in 3 days, which is crazy. If you think about it, an entire year's worth of rain fell in 3 days. So I think these things are happening more frequently. There is a more erratic pattern in climates. I think all of these things are probably going to be expected. But again, the accurate answer to that question we will hopefully develop as part of that climate projection, which should be done fairly soon.
All right, let's go to another caller, and Lupe is on the line. Lupe, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I have my question is about recycling. Does recycling actually work, or is that just something that we started thinking, you know, helps and doesn't really? I remember when we used to say, save a tree, use a plastic shopping bag. Well, now look what's happened. If recycling does actually work, is San Antonio doing enough to encourage recycling? I know Austin recycles aluminum foil. We don't. We don't recycle the black plastic bags everybody gets at those convenience stores, and they're just flying all over the place.
All right.
And we throw them in the garbage.
Okay. Let's get a call. So Doug Melnick, City of San Antonio. Recycling, yes. Is it a hoax?
Recycling is important, and it's not a hoax. I think, again, it gets to the idea of being as efficient as possible as we are with our resources. Our solid waste department has really been doing a tremendous amount trying to increase not just recycling opportunities, but also looking at ways of just trying to reduce other additions to the waste stream, whether it's the organics diversion program. I think the big challenge that we have, I think, in terms of recycling right now is with the global marketplace for those products and the cost to municipalities to take the materials, process them, and have somebody buy them. And
the whole global marketplace right now is in upheaval. China has ruled that they're not going to accept any foreign waste products anymore.
Right.
So that's
a conversation that's going on. The other really important thing is that anything that doesn't need to go to the landfill. I mean, we pay tipping fees to basically dispose of waste to landfills. And if we can, anything that we can pull out of that stream is going to be beneficial.
So it's going to have to become individual action, trying to decide what can I do to reduce the amount of waste that my household is creating, maybe doing your own composting, maybe doing your own reuse, not recycle, but reuse of items in your own house. And that's, and we'll talk about that when we come back from the break, how climate change, talk about cities, talk about nations, talk about large corporations, but is this really going to have to come down to individual people deciding that they're going to take personal responsibility for the planet and what happens when everyone makes those choices? The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Are you ready to take personal responsibility for climate change? And what does that mean? And what would that look like? And how inconvenient would it be? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980 as we talk about the San Antonio Climate Plan. A city can only do so much. It really comes down to people. And James is on the line. Speaking of people, here's James. James, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you very much. I was interested in about co-firing biomass in the coal-fired power plants to help reduce some of that biomass is going into the waste stream, like trees or trimmings that the city does a lot of.
Okay. Burning waste, burning biomass. And so that's a carbon. You know, biomass is still carbon. So, Chris, want to talk about that?
Yeah, we have looked at that. It's sort of an interesting technology. Those plants tend to be smaller, type plants. There's a lot of logistics to kind of get that material ready to be burned. The carbon impact, there's a debate of kind of is that a positive, because it still is carbon and it still has a carbon footprint. But we have looked at it, but we put our emphasis on solar and wind and energy efficiency.
You also get methane from the landfill, don't you?
Yes. Yeah, we do recapture our methane landfill gas, and we use that as a small part of our power portfolio.
But it keeps the methane from
going out in the atmosphere.
And we know that has a big effect on climate change. Javier has called in. Javier, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm an architect here in San Antonio, and I know earlier somebody made a comment about how to deal with the old stock of housing here in San Antonio. And I just wanted to point out that for every old house that you see out there is probably more energy efficient than building a new one if you take into account all the energy that gets put into putting all the materials together for a new home. And also, if you drive around in some areas of town with the pre-1950 houses around the 78212 zip code, you'll notice that most of them don't have air conditioning. So I'm talking about central AC. So really, when you're talking about energy efficient homes, I wouldn't be surprised if the older homes are much more energy efficient than the new ones being built, especially in areas where they don't need to be built so far outside the city of San Antonio.
All right, Javier, thank you for the call. So Hazim, you want to react to that?
Sure. And let me put on my architect's hat as well, because that is probably my main area of expertise. And I would agree with you completely. One of the things that we stress repeatedly in terms of building energy efficiency is that the concept of maintaining homes and buildings in general without turning them down and building new homes is the most resource efficient way of dealing with our building stock. Maybe not energy efficient, but resource efficient. And one of the issues that we have to deal with is that we do have an existing building stock that we should take advantage of. I would slightly disagree about what you said, that the older buildings are more energy efficient. Most of them are not. But however, there are a lot of programs, both at the local, state, and federal level, that are targeting this sector in particular, including many programs that CPS actually has. And the goal of these programs is to raise the efficiency of these older building stock and get them as close as possible to the level of new buildings. And by doing that, you're using less energy and heating and cooling and running these buildings, but also, like you said, you're saving the resources that we would have to use if you wanted to replace these with newer buildings. So in general, yes, I agree with your idea completely, yes.
Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I agree with Hazim. There's a huge opportunity in making our existing building stock more energy efficient, and CPS has the STEP program, which is Save for Tomorrow's Energy Plan, where we've got rebates for customers to go after. LED lighting, just, you know, putting in LED lights could have a big, big impact. 10-15% of your load, you know, from lighting in many cases. Insulation, doing an energy audit, seeing how tight your home is, you know, around windows, around doors. So there are steps that, you know, every citizen, every customer can take to make their house more energy efficient, save money on their utility bill, and make a difference for the environment.
And I'm just going to put my planner hat on.
Okay,
If we're talking about older communities, when you start looking at how they were just designed, they tend to be a little denser, more accessibility to services, resources, jobs, transportation opportunities. That's an energy savings opportunity as well. I mean, that's an efficiency that those older communities tend to have.
Absolutely. And that actually ties back to the question that we had a few minutes ago about growth, because growth in itself is not a problem. It's how we grow that is the issue. So it is possible for us, if we change our growth patterns, which is something that I know SA Tomorrow has dealt with last year, and there are a lot of new patterns for growth that have been proposed. If we do that, then we can grow. We can grow economically. We can manage the growth in population, but do so in a much better, much more resource-efficient way.
So city competitiveness. Cities compete against each other all the time for new economic opportunities, like this Amazon thing that was happening, which San Antonio didn't go for, but... what difference would this make if having an effective San Antonio climate plan in place, where we show future employers that San Antonio is doing this, is that going to be in our favor, or would this kind of make some things more expensive and effective? How do we keep an eye on the ball for competitiveness as we move forward with a climate plan for the city? Doug?
Well, I think that's a complex question.
But it's an important one.
Well, absolutely. I think that, yes, there are, as we talked about Moody's, it is something that's being considered. But in terms of industry and businesses, as well as potential new residents, I think many of them are looking to see where San Antonio is on this issue, because they do realize that it's important, and it's a real issue that's going to impact whether it's their bottom line or their family's quality of life. So I think it behooves us in that way. I think the other real important reason to do this is for the residents and the businesses and the industries that we have here now. I think if we do not address this, if we do not reduce and prepare, it's going to put us not just at a disadvantage in the future, potentially economically, but it's going to deteriorate our quality of life. And so I think it's really about the all sectors of our community making sure that we have the opportunity to flourish now in the future. But people are looking at us from the outside and making decisions based upon what we're doing now.
Chris, do you think that big corporations looking around this country where they're going to put their next factory or their next coating operation are going to look at cities that have a realistic and progressive approach to climate change?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're seeing it with, you know, some of the larger Fortune 500 companies like Apple, Costco. You got HEB here. I mean, you know, USAA. Folks want to be in a forward-looking city. They don't want to be in a backward city. They want a technology-enabled city. They want a connected city. So I think this is a huge opportunity to, you know, accelerate economic development in our city.
And Hazim, how does that look as you put together your climate plan? the competitiveness? Is that part of the equation?
Absolutely. I think this is something that we have to consider. Otherwise, the potential for implementation for our plan becomes a lot lower. So certainly, we will be looking at that. We'll be looking at the economic impact of all the strategies that we have, that we're going to study, as well as their impact on different sectors of the community. So yes, absolutely.
So what is the timeline? What is the goal? How do we know that we're moving in the right direction, Hazem?
So our plan at this point is to conclude our work in spring of 2019. However, throughout the next year and a few months, we have a number of interim points in which we plan to have some interim deliverables that we can then take to the city, take to the community, and get input back from them. So we've kind of split the two components. So the climate action plan now, we're hoping to conclude by the end of 2018, and the climate adaptation plan, hopefully by March or April of 2019.
So will there be recommendations? What will there be in this plan?
Well, our charge is to develop a plan, which is a set of strategies, but also implementation recommendations, correct, to the city as to how best to implement these strategies over the next few years.
And so, Doug?
Yeah, so basically the way, if you look at climate action plans across the country and even internationally, it's basically a roadmap. And so it's going to, in terms of the emissions reductions, we'll have a target. We'll have a sector-by-sector breakdown of what we need to do in those sectors to reach that target. And then within those sectors, there'll be specific strategies that are quantified to show us how many emissions we can get from those specific strategies. So it's going to be a highly quantified document that's going to provide us that pathway forward.
What good is it if San Antonio reduces its emissions, but other cities don't?
And that's the key. And this is one of the things that we're seeing and been seeing for quite some time, but I think it sort of came to a head when this current presidential administration basically recommended removing ourselves from the Paris climate commitment was sort of mobilization from the local levels of government and where mayors across the country basically said, well, we're going to do this regardless because it's in the best interest of our communities. So I think for us locally, I think it's keeping continuing to take part in those national conversations, as well as we have a very close relationship with Austin, and we're fostering more of a regional sort of collaborative to start working with other municipalities, to start looking at this as sort of a regional and holistic view, because it's not just a San Antonio issue.
And if I can quickly add to that, a lot of the strategies that we'll be looking at, yes, they will help us in reducing GHG emissions, but they also have other impacts. They have impacts on improving the quality of life, improving air quality, improving water quality, and many other positive impacts to the San Antonio community. So GHG aside, and again, GHG is a critical target of our plan, the main target of our plan, but a lot of the things that they will be looking at will have a lot of other co-benefits.
Spring 2019 is when we see the final draft of the plan. We'll be hearing about it before then, because there's going to be a lot of opportunities for community input, because this is not something you can just shove down people's throats. It's got to be part of an ongoing conversation. We'll be having that conversation here in The Source as the days roll by. And this is The Source. Thanks for tuning us in.